Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, those of you who are here, and good morning to those of you who are joining us online. I have to say, everyone's hair looks just great today. No one looks terribly bedraggled, which means it probably hasn't started snowing or raining in earnest yet. Merry Christmas, happy Advent, happy Thanksgiving. It's so nice to have you all here today and joining us online. I want to just introduce our guest presenter for these next weeks in Advent, Dr. Julie Faith Parker, the Reverend Dr. Julie Faith Parker, an ordained minister in the United Methodist Church and associate professor of biblical studies just down at General Theological Seminary, a neighbor of ours. She's going to be leading us in reflecting on the women of the Christmas story, of the Advent story. And so I invite you to welcome her warmly now.
Thank you so much. Thank you for being here. Hello to all of you who are watching online. It is really a joy and an honor for me to be at this historic and important church in American Protestantism, and I'd like to thank Reverend Lavolsi, and I'd like to thank all of you for welcoming me. It's really a joy to be here. Today we're going to look at the Gospel of Luke and do a little bit of an overview, and then we're going to talk about Elizabeth. Next week we'll talk about Mary, and then we will talk about Anna, three women who are part of the Advent story and Christmas story, all in Luke's gospel. So let's begin with a little bit of an overview on the Gospel of Luke. Luke is one of three synoptic gospels. Synoptic, it comes from the word, from Latin, with one eye, being seen together. And the three synoptic gospels are Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And they're called the Synoptic Gospels because they basically follow the same storyline. They tell about Jesus coming into the world, either through his birth or coming to us through his baptism, and then the story of his life, his ministry, his passion, his death, and his resurrection. They're written in the same sequence, and scholars believe that the Gospel of Mark, written around the year 70 CE, or Common Era, or we used to say AD, now we say CE. 70 CE is the earliest. Matthew and Luke draw on Mark, as well as one other source that scholars call Q. That's a German from the German word die Quelle, that means the source. So Luke is drawing from Mark and also from this other source, Q, and then puts in some of his own material that scholars call L. Luke and Matthew were written around the year 80 CE, and John is a very different gospel. It is more overtly theological. It has different stories, many of which are left out of the other gospels, and many appear only in this one. So let's talk a little bit about the author of Luke. We know that Luke was a Greek-speaking Christian from outside of Palestine. Traditionally, he's believed to be the traveling companion of Paul, although scholars question that for a number of reasons. But we don't know that he did know the Jewish scriptures in Greek, and he had a very rich vocabulary. There are 800 words from this author that we don't find any place else in the entire New Testament. So he's really a very wonderful writer. Luke is the longest of the four Gospels, and Luke departs from Mark more than Matthew. With Acts, the author of Luke also wrote Acts, and you put those two books together, that's over one quarter of the entire New Testament. So this author has a very big influence in our understanding of Jesus. Scholars believe it's the same author who wrote Luke and Acts because we have the continuity of style and thought and also the overarching plan of Jesus' life and then the life of the church. The stories that we're going to look at in the next 3 weeks are all unique to Luke's gospel. And one of the emphases that we find in Luke is showing Jesus as a prophet with ministry to and with those who are often excluded. And that includes women. We have far more women in Luke than any other gospel, interestingly. And scholars think that perhaps the writer of Luke had access to a women's source. So maybe there was a collection of stories about women in Jesus's life and in the early church that this author took and incorporated into his gospel. There are 42 passages related to women in the Gospel of Luke, and 23 of those passages only appear in this gospel. So we have much more prominence of women. Do you think that's a good thing or not such a good thing? It's a good thing. You know, now that's what, I'll tell you, that's what feminist scholars thought too at first. They said, oh, this is wonderful. We've got all these stories about women in the Gospel of Luke. He really supports women. But then there was a scholar named Jane Schaberg, and she said, not so fast. Because what she looked at was the stories of women in Luke, and she noticed that there's a pattern. They tend to be quiet. They tend to be subservient. Their role is to support the men. Let me give you an example. You know the story of Mary and Martha, right? Okay, so in that story, just to refresh your memory, it takes place in Luke chapter 10. We have these two sisters, Mary and Martha, and they're with Jesus. And what's Martha doing? She's cooking. She's getting dinner ready, okay? And what's Mary doing? She's sitting at Jesus' feet. And what does Martha say? She needs to help me. This isn't really fair. Can you blame her, right? So Martha says that. And what does Jesus say to Martha? Martha, Martha, Mary has chosen the better part, which shall not be taken away from her. He affirms Mary's role. Now, early scholars said, this is wonderful. Jesus is saying, you should learn, women. That's great. Jane Schaberg says, not so fast. Because look at what she's doing. She's sitting at his feet and she's silent. That's the role that Jesus is affirming at Luke's hand. Compare that to the Gospel of John. Do you know the story of Mary and Martha in the Gospel of John? Mary and Martha, they're the sisters of Lazarus. And Jesus comes to their house and they talk with him. And Martha proclaims to Jesus, you are the Messiah. She has this Christological affirmation, which is not what we get. We get a devaluing of women's work. We all like to eat, right? You know, that's important work. And when I would teach New Testament, I taught at Colby College for a number of years, and when I would teach New Testament there, we would act out the story of Mary and Martha, first the way it is in the gospel, and then we would do it in my fantasy way. And in my fantasy way, I would give them scripts where Jesus says to Martha, you're right, Martha. This is important. Let's all cook together, and then we can all talk together. Sadly, that is not what Luke did. And so we just have to work with the material that we have, but we can question it. I tell my students constantly, the power is not in the text. The power is in the interpretation. Keep that in mind, friends, because you and I have the power to interpret this text. So let's take a look at the women in this text and who they are. These stories of women that we have that we're going to look at together, I actually do see very powerful women in this text. In Luke 1 to 2, I see women who are talking to each other. I see women, Elizabeth and Anna, who are not named in the other Gospels. I see women who come forward with their own Christological affirmations, including that of Elizabeth. So let's take a look at this text. Let's read it together. I'll be the narrator here, and later on we'll get to parts. So, in the days of King Herod of Judea, there was a priest named Zechariah who belonged to the priestly order of Abijah. His wife was a descendant of Aaron, and her name was Elizabeth. Both of them were righteous before God, living blamelessly according to all the commandments and regulations of the Lord. But they had no children because Elizabeth was barren and both were getting on in years. Let's unpack this a little bit. Let's talk about the names here. There is a priest named Zechariah. Does that name sound familiar, Zechariah? He's got a book in the Bible. Thank you very much. He is one of the minor prophets, Zechariah. And Luke wants to show us Jesus as a prophet. So he brings up these prophetic names. Zechariah means in Hebrew, Zechar is to remember, and Yah is Yahweh, the name of the Lord. So Yahweh remembers. That's what Luke wants us to do too with Yahweh. Remember the stories of the Old Testament and how Jesus is following in this prophetic line. Abijah, who is Abijah? Avi means my father. Like Jesus says, Abba, right? Daddy, Abba. Avi is my father. And Yah is what?
Yahweh.
Good. So my father is Yahweh. The name Abijah actually appears 29 times in the Old Testament. So we don't know that this is one person in particular, but we know that this is a Yahweh believer. His wife was a descendant of Aaron. Who's Aaron?
Moses'
brother. Good. And what do we know about Moses' brother? Okay, that's right. Moses is he's with them as they go into the promised land. Moses isn't, but Aaron is, and so is Joshua. He makes the golden calf, Exodus chapter 32, one of the funniest chapters in the Hebrew Bible. I just threw in the gold. How came this calf? Okay. but also, he's a priest. He's a priest. So this shows that she is from this priestly order. What does Elizabeth mean? El means God. The I means my God. Sheva means oath. Sheva means oath. It also means the number seven. You might have Jewish friends, and when someone dies, they sit Shiva, 7 days. Sheva, same word, because that's a holy number, the days of creation. So my God is an oath, is her name. Her name is also a testimony to faith. And so they are righteous before the Lord. They're blameless. They are following the commandments of the Lord, but they had no children. Does this sound familiar? An older couple can't have children. Who's it remind you of?
Sarah.
Oh, you know your Bible. Good. I'm impressed. Sarah and Abraham, right? Back in Genesis. It's Genesis 12. So here we have them. They have no children, which was a source of deep shame for women, a source of deep stigma in the biblical world. It was very important to have children, and particularly sons. Why? Not because sons were considered inherently better, but because it was a patrilocal society. And so when daughters grew up, they moved to the household of their husband. If you had only girls, you would be bereft of anyone to take care of you in your old age. And that's why people want sons. So Elizabeth and Zechariah want a son. And we see what happens with them. Let's read this, please. And I'm going to ask someone to read the part of the angel in yellow. Can I have a volunteer to be the angel when we get there? You see the yellow? Can you sort of see it?
But the angel said to him.
The angel said. Okay, so I'll read the narrator. Let's start. And do I have a volunteer? Wonderful. Thank you so much. Once, when he was serving as a priest before God and his section was on duty, he was chosen by lot, according to the custom of the priesthood, to enter the sanctuary of the Lord and offer incense. Now, at the time of the incense offering, the whole assembly of the people was praying outside. Then there appeared to him an angel of the Lord standing at the right side of the altar of incense. When Zechariah saw him, he was terrified, and fear overwhelmed him. But the angel said to him,
"Do not be afraid, Zechariah, for your prayer has been heard. Your wife Elizabeth will bear you a son, and you will name him John. You will have joy and gladness, and many will rejoice at his birth, for he will be great in the sight of the Lord. He must never drink wine or strong drink. Even before his birth, he will be filled with the Holy Spirit. He will turn many of the people of Israel to the Lord, their God. With the spirit and power of Elijah, he will go before him to turn the hearts of parents to their children and the disobedient to the wisdom of the righteous, to make ready a people prepared for the Lord."
Thank you so much. What's your name?
Sandy.
Thank you, Sandy. Does this sound familiar? So what's the scene here? We have Zechariah. He's serving as a priest. He's making this offering. And then this angel comes and appears to him. And what does the angel tell him? Okay, don't be afraid. Why not? What's going to happen? You're going to have a son. an angel comes, shows up, says, don't be afraid, you're going to have a son. Does that sound familiar?
Yes.
What does it sound like?
Mary.
Sounds like Mary. What do we call it when an angel shows up and tells you you're going to have a child? We call it an annunciation. We know of Mary's annunciation to Jesus. That is not the only annunciation. There are 5 annunciations in the Bible. This is another one. This one comes to Zechariah. It is setting the stage for what happens with Mary. So the angel appears. The reaction of the person who's receiving the annunciation is what?
Fear.
The angel assures this person, tells this person will have a son, and then makes a prophecy about the son. What's going to happen with this son? He will be great in the sight of the Lord. He must never drink wine or strong drink. Have you heard that before?
Samuel.
Good. We get it with Samuel. Thank you very much. We also see it with Samson, Judges 15 through 17. We see with Samuel, 1 Samuel 1 to 2. We see it with Samson, Judges 15 to 17. And so here, they also get annunciations. Hannah, mother of Samuel, has an annunciation. Wife of Manoah. She's not named. Mother of Samson, she also has an annunciation. So we see this is following very much in the tradition of the Hebrew scriptures. And so this birth has been foretold, and with the spirit and power of whom?
Elijah.
Who's Elijah? Great prophet, right? He's the prophet that we see at the scene of the transfiguration. He represents all the prophets. Eliyah, my God is Yahweh. So Elijah is here. Again, Luke is getting across this message about the great prophet who is to come, very much in accordance with the traditions of the Hebrew scriptures. Okay, let's continue. I need someone to read Zechariah, please. May I have a volunteer? Oh, good. Thank you so much. Okay. And then Angel, Sandy, you're back on, okay? Okay. Zechariah said to the angel,
how will I know that this is so? For I am an old man, and my wife is getting on in years.
The angel replied,
I am Gabriel. I stand in the presence of God, and I have been sent to speak to you and to bring you this good news. But now, because you did not believe my words, which will be fulfilled in their time, you will become mute, unable to speak until the day these things occur.
Meanwhile, the people were waiting for Zechariah and wondered at his delay in the sanctuary. When he did not come out, he could not speak to them, and they realized that he had seen a vision in the sanctuary. He kept motioning to them and remained unable to speak. When his time of service was ended, he went to his home. What's the name of the angel who comes to Gabriel? I'm sorry, Zechariah. Gave it away. Okay, yes, that's right. Gabriel. Gabriel comes to Zechariah and gives him this news, but he does not believe it. Is that something that we also see?
Yeah.
Can't believe it. Why can't he believe it? Because he's too old. Why can't Mary believe it? She's too young. Because she says, I am a virgin. So again, we have this pattern that is being set up. The pattern that is so familiar to us with Mary is not original with Mary. It is something that we see already with Zechariah. Luke is setting the stage in a very prophetic way so we do not miss what will happen with Jesus. Because what Luke wants to do is show that Jesus is the Messiah. What does Messiah mean? It actually is from the Hebrew Mashiach. It means the same thing as Christeo in Greek. What is Christeo? Christ. Both words simply mean anointed. That's all Messiah means, anointed, the anointed one. And Christ means the anointed one. One is Hebrew, Mashiach, Messiah. One is Greek, Christ. That's what it means, anointed. So Luke wants to show, as do the other gospel writers, that Jesus is the Messiah or the Christ or the anointed one by God. Is this an easy or a hard case to make? It's a hard case to make. Why? Because there are all sorts of predictions about what it's going to be like when the Messiah comes. The wolf will lie down with the lamb, Isaiah 11, the peaceable kingdom. It's going to be this reign of peace and glory and freedom and light and love filling the world. Jesus of Nazareth comes and goes. Day-to-day life is pretty much the same. So you need to make out the case that this one is the Messiah. It's not an easy case to make, but the gospel writers try in a lot of different ways. And that's what we see Luke doing right here, showing that Jesus' birth is very much in the pattern of what you've seen before, and he sets the stage with Zechariah and Elizabeth. So, and then we have the scene of, yes, do you have a question?
When Zechariah becomes mute, is that a punishment or is that a time for reflection?
You know, the excellent question. The power is in the interpretation, right? So you can do with it what you like. He did not speak to them. He realizes it. He kept motioning to them. His service was ended. He went home. You know, people often go to punishment in the commentaries, but I love your idea about the reflection. Why not? Does it say it's a punishment? Does it say it's because of his lack of faith?
Yes.
Where, what's it say?
Because you did not believe.
Okay, which verse? 20. Oh, yes, okay. Okay, there you go. You do not believe my words. So there you go, punishment. Okay, go to the text. Good. Let's take, so next week we're going to talk about Mary, but now let's go to Elizabeth. So let's read this, please. I need someone to read the voice of Elizabeth, please. Good, thank you so much. Here we go. After those days, his wife Elizabeth conceived, and for 5 months she remained in seclusion. She said,
"This is what the Lord has done for me when he looked favorably on me and took away the disgrace I have endured among my people."
So she is happy that this, she now has this child, perhaps because Zechariah is mute, that she has gone away as well. Let's keep reading, please. Who's reading, Elizabeth? What's your name? I'm sorry.
Susan,
if you keep reading here. In those days, Mary set out and went with haste to Judean town in the hill country, where she entered the house of Zechariah and greeted Elizabeth. When Elizabeth heard Mary's greeting, the child leaped in her womb, and Elizabeth was filled with the Holy Spirit and exclaimed with a loud cry,
"Blessed are you among women, and blessed is the fruit of your womb. And why has this happened to me, that the mother of my Lord comes to me? For as soon as I heard the sound of your greeting, the child in my womb leapt for joy, and blessed is she who believed that there would be a fulfillment of what was spoken to her by the Lord."
Okay, thank you very much. Here we see this affirmation of Elizabeth and her role in affirming Mary. So Mary sets out, this is after the scene of the Annunciation to her, which again we'll look at next week. And so she's gotten this news, which is very distressing to her. And so if you had something distressing happen to you, what do you want to do? You want to find someone you know and you love and you trust, whom you think will believe you. And that's what she does. She finds this relative, Elizabeth. And I love verse 41. Elizabeth heard her greeting, the child leaped in her womb. This is actually the only place that Jesus and John the Baptist meet in the Gospel of John. In utero. I'm sorry, Gospel of Luke. And so she exclaims this, "Blessed are you among women." Just what Mary must be yearning to hear, this affirmation. Why has this happened to me? The mother of my Lord comes to me. How does Elizabeth know this is the mother of her Lord? Perhaps the Holy Spirit, we don't know, the text doesn't stay. But still, this is an affirmation of what Mary needs to hear now. The child in my womb leaped for joy. Blessed is she who believed there would be a fulfillment of what was spoken to her by the Lord. This great affirmation, just what Mary needs it the most. I'd like to go now to a little film clip that of this scene. It's just for 5 minutes. This is after Mary's received her Annunciation.
Even your own cousin has conceived a son in her old age. Elizabeth.
This is foolish talk. Elizabeth is not expecting you now.
She says I'm always welcome. So does Zechariah.
You said you wish to visit in the summer.
That's what you told us a season ago.
Much has changed since then.
And what of Joseph? Is he to expect your return?
He is. Jacob and his family are going south in the morning. I've told Sarah I can help with the children.
Then make certain Zachariah finds a good family for you to return with.
Thank you. I'll be here for the harvest. I promise. Messiah, to deliver my people. Please, Lord, let Elizabeth be with child as the angel spoke.
That the mother of my Lord should come to me. The moment I heard your voice, my child leapt in my womb for joy. Blessed is she who believes the Lord's words.
The star is here. Jupiter.
It's my family. Here we have a scene of women interacting with women. Mary is with Elizabeth. In the text, it's Elizabeth speaking, but we get this sense of their closeness, and it's just the two of them. Can you think of any other scenes in the Bible where it's just women together interacting without men? Ruth and Naomi. Ruth and Naomi, good, that's one. We can count them on one hand. Very good, that's one. Ruth and Naomi? The empty tomb, okay, that's good. That's good, we have women at the empty tomb. That's good to notice, right? In all four Gospels, the accounts are different. They all agree that the risen Christ first appears to women. Deborah and Yael. Yael, perhaps, although usually you have Barak and Sisera. They don't actually, Yael comes after Deborah. She speaks of her, but that's good. There are really, honestly, very few. We have, in the Hebrew Bible, we have Pharaoh's daughter talking with Miriam in Exodus chapter 2. You might recall that scene. We have Ruth and Naomi. We have Rachel and Leah. We have this scene here in the New Testament. We've got the scene at the resurrection. Maybe a couple of others, but not a lot. This is rare in the Hebrew Bible, But we have this one scene right here, and it is a scene of affirmation between these two women. Let's continue with the text and Elizabeth's story. So I need, all of you are going to be the part of the people, and yes, and I need my Zechariah to come through here and speak. His name is John, okay? And Mary remained with her about 3 months and then returned to her home. Now the time came for Elizabeth to give birth, and she bore a son. Her neighbors and relatives heard that the Lord had shown his great mercy to her, and they rejoiced with her. Okay, that's all of you. Yay, yay, okay. On the eighth day, they came to circumcise the child, and they were going to name him Zechariah after his father. But his mother said, no, sorry, that's his mother first. That's his mother. Elizabeth? My Elizabeth? Okay, there we go. Okay, I'm going to give you the run-up again. Let's go to verse 60. But his mother said, they said to her, then they began motioning to his father. Who's Zechariah? Okay, start motioning towards him. They began motioning to his father to find out what name he wanted to give him. He asked for a writing tablet and wrote,
his name is John.
And all of them were amazed. Okay. Immediately his mouth was opened and his tongue freed, and he began to speak, praising God. Fear came over all their neighbors. Are we looking afraid? And all these things were talked about throughout the entire country of Judea, and all who heard them pondered them and said,
what then will this child become?
For indeed the hand of the Lord was with him. Let's look at Elizabeth's role here. Elizabeth names the child. In the Hebrew Bible, women outnumber men as name givers. There are 47 accounts of naming in the Hebrew Bible, and in 29 of those instances, it is the woman who names the child. It is much rarer to have naming accounts in the New Testament. And the only instances that we have of naming in the New Testament are around John and Jesus. And it's mothers and fathers and angels that are involved. So we see this portrait of Elizabeth here. I want to ask you, now that we've looked at the texts that give us her story, what are some adjectives that you would use to describe Elizabeth? Complacent in what way?
She accepts her, she's obedient.
She's obedient. Is what she receives what she wants?
Absolutely.
It is what she wants,
yes. She wants a child.
She wants a child, that's right. So she gets this child. What's her reaction to having this child?
Joyful.
Yeah, she seems joyful, right? And what does she do with that joy? What's the best thing to do with joy? She shares it. How does she share her joy? How does she share her joy?
Her
greeting. Her greeting. Her greeting is one of joy. If you see someone, you say, blessed are you. Blessed are you. Isn't that a joyful greeting? Yes, Eileen, were you going to say something else? She expresses her joy, and we see the solidarity among these two women. What's the difference between them?
Age.
One is old, one is young, one is barren, one is fertile. So this is a parallel that we also have earlier in the Bible. One is old, one is young, one is barren, one is fertile. Does that sound familiar? Abraham, that's right. Remember with Abraham and Sarah and Hagar? That's right. So we have, again, this similarity. But in that story, the two women are pitted against each other. Do you recall that? But not in this story. In this story, the two women come together, and they come together in this time of great joy and happiness. What else do you notice about Elizabeth? Yes, please.
I thought she was courageous.
In
her greeting of Mary, because it demonstrates a really solid belief before she doesn't have the baby in her arms yet, but she's already thankful.
Mm-hmm. That's true. So that she does, she is thankful. She feels this child leaping in her womb. It always is, you know, it's always, I always think this is such a wonderful moment in this story that so many people don't even know about. Her own body is reacting with a child within her womb is participating in utero in this joyful event. Yes, please.
When she stood adamantly against the crowd and insisted that the child's name be John.
Yes.
Ballsy.
That's true. That's true. That's pretty bold, right? Good point. So here she is. Let's take a look at that text. She's standing up to all of these people. They're all her neighbors and her relatives, and they're rejoicing with her. So that says something also about her character. If something good happens to you and people rejoice, that reflects well on you. That means that you're respected, that you're liked. If something good happens to you and people feel upset, that means they're experiencing schadenfreude because they don't like you, right? But here, they're all rejoicing with her and they're so grateful for what has happened. And they say, they're gonna name him Zechariah, but she steps in. She says, no, his name is to be called John. How would she know that? Did the angel talk to her? The angel spoke to Zechariah, and what happened after that? Zechariah was struck mute. So how would she know? Maybe he could write. Perhaps he could write. And that would speak well of him because he's of this priestly caste, right? So priests were well educated, so he must be able to write. Yes, please.
At the end of one of those slides, the last line says, and all that the angel had foretold to her. So maybe everything the angel said to her isn't in the text.
Okay, perhaps a lot of times we, thank you, good point. A lot of times we get what scholars call a gap. There's a gap in the text and we have to fill it in. So somehow she knows, somehow she is aware. How is she aware of Mary's being pregnant?
Maybe it's in the gap.
Maybe it's in the gap, right? Maybe it's in the gap. There's a, the Bible makes us work. The Bible, especially the Hebrew Bible, very sparse on adjectives. What does Moses look like? Abraham's, we don't know. You need to fill in the details. You need to become part of the story. And a lot of times things happen that aren't explained by the narrator, but somehow the story moves along to the next step and it takes us along with it. The Gospel of Luke is like the musical of Gospels. Anyone here like Broadway musicals? Oh yeah, sure, we all do, right? Okay, or a lot of us do, it's so much fun. Luke is like the musical, the Broadway musical of Gospels. Why? Because when something wonderful happens, people burst into song, okay? So I thought it might be fun if we also burst into song with a song about Elizabeth. So here we go. I would like you to join with me, please, in singing this song. This is a song that I just wrote for our Bible study today, and the tune is O Come, O Come, Emmanuel, and this will help us to appreciate this character of Elizabeth. Are you with me?
Yes.
Wonderful. She's old and barren, worn down by despair, but still her faith reminds her God is there. To give her faith and bring living joy through her own child and her